So Mackenzie contacted me. He was going to be running a little bit late. He'll be joining us in a little bit. Welcome to the second day of the three-day December council meeting. Got several items on the agenda today, and we will start out with the Fall 2020 Management Track Assessments. Dr. Russ Brown, Northeast Fishery Science Center. Dr. Brown.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Good morning. I'm Russell Brown. I'm the branch chief of the Population Dynamics Branch at the Northeast Fisheries Science Center. I'll be presenting results of the 2020 Autumn Management Track Stock Assessments. Next slide. Just a brief overview of the presentation. I'll give a brief process review of the management track process. We'll go briefly through the management track assessment results for 14 stocks. We'll do that stock by stock. And then at the end of the presentation, I'll try and answer a couple of questions that have come up recently relative to NTAP catchability and electronic monitoring data incorporation into stock assessments. Next slide. Just a brief review of the process. These are management track stock assessments. So these are performed on a regular schedule that's determined by the Northeast Region Coordinating Council. And they are used to basically set management specifications for related stocks. We have a process. This is an infographic that we've developed to try and describe that process. There is opportunities for data and stakeholder input months to years prior to conducting these management track stock assessments. In the assessment planning process, the lead analyst develops an assessment plan based on the data available and stakeholder input. This assessment plan is reviewed by the assessment oversight panel, usually in a one-day meeting. The analyst presents the plan to the assessment oversight panel, and this panel of experts makes recommendations relative to the amount of peer review that this work should be, the amount of peer review that should be conducted relative to the work. The assessment is then conducted based on the plan that was approved by the assessment oversight panel. There is a peer review that usually is a 3 to 5 day meeting where we have external experts that conduct the review process. And the public is invited to participate in that process. And then those results are then transmitted to the various management bodies, in this case, the New England Fishery Management Council. Next slide. The assessment oversight panel was held on May 27th of this year, and the plans were presented for 14 stocks. The peer review occurred from September 9th through the 13th of this year. Pat Sullivan chaired the panel, and all the panel members were members of the New England SSC. The final report of the peer review is available online, and then the final assessment report, we're still compiling that and getting it 508 compliant. Next slide. These are the 14 management track assessments that were conducted. The reviews are based on the recommendations from the assessment oversight panel. So we had three stocks that had a level one review, and that was direct delivery to the council process. Those were Ocean Pout, Atlantic Halibut, and Northern Silver Hake. We had several stocks that were subjected to an expedited peer review. So these were reviewed during the peer review meeting from September 9th through the 13th. And then we had advanced and enhanced review process for the series of stocks listed under level three. Next slide. So we'll take these in order. We'll start out with Ocean Pallet. Next slide. So Ocean Pallet uses a fairly simplistic assessment, approach. It was a level one review, utilizes an exploitation ratio. There was no change in stock status in this case. And so the stock continues to be overfished, but overfishing is not occurring. Next slide. So if we look at this in a little more detail, we can see the NEFFC survey index, which has been at fairly low levels since the mid-2000s. And then we can see the exploitation ratio, which has also been relatively low. You can see that it ticks up in the final year of the time series. Next slide. So moving on to Atlantic Halibut, another level one direct delivery stock. Next slide. So here we use a model to basically adjust the catches upward or downward based on indications from the model that's used in this case. In this particular case, the catch multiplier is less than one, which means the catch advice is anticipated to be lower than it was last year. Of note here, there was an error in the Canadian catch in the assessment, which was corrected at the SSC level. And that was a case where the NAFO catches were not accurately described within the databases that we use for the assessment. Next slide. Moving on to the two Silver Hake stocks, the Northern Silver Hake stock was a level one. The Southern Silver Hake stock was a level two, and I'll explain why that's the case in a minute. Next slide. So the Northern Silver Hake stock uses an index-based approach. In this case, we added 3 years of data from 2017 to 2019. This include fishery dependent data, the landings and discards, so the catch, and then the fishery independent data, which utilizes the fall survey only. In this case, we maintain the existing reference points, so there were no changes to that. And the 2020 recommended stock status is that the stock is not overfished. For that matter, the BMSY proxy is about five times the proxy threshold. The other status is that overfishing is not occurring, and the relative exploitation rate is approximately 5% of the fishing proxy threshold. Next slide. And so here are some data from Silver Hake. You can see in the most recent years that the catches have declined. The survey index has declined a little bit, but still seems to be maintaining at fairly high levels. So the catches since the last assessment have declined by 62%. So the catches in 2019 were 1,800 metric tons, and that was well below the ACL of almost 30,000 metric tons. The discards over the past 3 years of the assessment were approximately 10% of the total catch. And you can see that the survey declined by 34% from 2017 to 2019. Next slide. So in summary, survey index has declined. The stock still remains healthy. The survey biomass is well above the target. The relative exploitation rate is below the target. We have seen a decline in the survey biomass. The estimated OFL does suggest that the stock can withstand a higher level of exploitation. So next slide. So moving on to Southern Silver Hake, this was a level two expedited review. And the reason for this is the panel, the AOP panel wanted increased scrutiny and peer review of the low 2017 fall survey index coverage. This is another one that's an index-based approach. Added, again, 3 years of data to the assessment. We maintained the existing reference points, so there was no change there. And the recommended stock status was not overfished, and that overfishing is not occurring. Next slide. We look at this in a little bit more detail. We can see that the landings or the catch has increased since the last assessment by about 41%. The 2019 catch was about 5,400 metric tons, and that's well below the ACL, which is a hair over 19,000 metric tons. The discards were steadily increasing from 2017 to 2019. So they, in 2017, they represented about 10% of the catch. In 2019, it was more like a quarter of the catch. The fall survey indices increased by 88% between 2017 and 2019. Next slide. So a quick summary. The assessment indicates an improvement in stock status for southern silver hake. The catches in the south have increased in the recent 3 years. And this is likely due to evidence of increase in the survey index. And similar to the north, the southern overfishing limit suggests that the stock can withstand a higher level of exploitation. Next slide. Moving on to wolf fish. Next slide. This is a level two, this is recommended for a level two expedited peer review by the EOP panel. They were concerned about revised MRIP estimates that were included in the assessment, and also a change in the L50. This assessment uses a scale model. Again, there were no changes in the stock status. The stock remains overfished. But overfishing is not occurring. Next slide. Here is some information relative to wolf fish. If you look in the upper right hand panel, this is the fishing mortality rate. You can see that that declined sharply in 2010 with the prohibition on possession of wolf fish, and it's remained at low levels since. The panel on the bottom left is the spawning stock biomass. You can see that that declined pretty steadily from 1980 to 2010 over a 30-year period. And you can see that the model indicates that there's starting to be some increase in the spawning stock biomass. It's rather moderate at this point. And then the panel on the lower right is age one recruitment, and you can see here that there were stronger year classes in the 1970s through the 1990s. You can see that recruitment remained at relatively low levels, you know, since about the mid-1990s. There's some indication of increased recruitment in this stock in the most recent years. And that may be driving that small increase that we're seeing in the spawning stock biomass. Next slide. Okay, moving on to Acadian redfish. Next slide. We can see with Acadian redfish, there's been increased recruitment since the 1980s. We've seen increases in spawning stock biomass since the 1990s. We've seen a relatively low fishing mortality rate since the late 1990s. And the conclusion here is the stock is not overfished and overfishing is not occurring. If we look at the panels on the right-hand side of the slide, you can see that there have been some significant year classes entering the fishery since about 2010. We can see that the biomass has increased steadily, but there may be some indications that that's leveling off. And then the fishing mortality rate in the lower right-hand side, continues to be relatively low and below the threshold. Next slide. The predicted spawning stock biomass continues to increase. The survey indices are decreasing or varying without trend in recent years. The plan here is to explore alternative model dating weighting scenarios in the next stock assessment. So again, you can see the survey indices in the most recent years ticking downwards somewhat. So, next slide. Okay, moving on to northern and southern windowpane flounder. Next slide. So in the case of northern windowpane flounder, the recommended stock status is overfishing is unknown, and the overfished status is unknown. The AIM model was previously utilized that was rejected due to a poor fit. So there was a new empirical assessment approach that was rejected for status, but used for catch advice. And it's basically a swept area biomass that's based on incorporating the NTAP catchability survey catchability study. There are no possession or removals from the stock. Almost all of the catch is discards. And in this case, we look over at the northern windowpane survey indices. They're relatively low, but they're also noisy. And in the bottom right panel, you can see that the estimated exploitation rate appears to be relatively low. The swept area biomass has increased in the past few years, but it's still relatively low compared with historical levels. Next slide. With southern windowpane flounder, the recommended stock status is that there is no overfishing and that it is not overfished. In this case, the AIM model is utilized to determine stock status, and the AIM fit to the model is fairly robust. Again, there's no possession and removals are almost all from discards. The survey indices have been fairly stable, but they do remain above the biomass threshold. Next slide. Moving on to Gulf of Maine winter flounder. Next slide. So in this assessment, we updated trends in the Northeast Fisheries Science Center, the Maine Department of Fisheries, Marine Fisheries, and the Maine New Hampshire survey indices. We estimated from 2009 to 2019 that the 30 plus centimeter survey biomass swept area for non-overlapping stratas in each of those sets. And we estimated the 2009 to 2019 catch, which includes a whole variety of landings and discards. Next slide. We had a couple of new sources of information relative to the Gulf of Maine winter flounder assessment. We had additional tows from the twin trawl experiment that revised estimates of Q for winter flounder. These were incorporated into the stock assessment. We also had new MRIP recreational catch estimates. The catch data really didn't have much of an effect on the catch advice. Next slide. So here we can see The biomass of Gulf of Maine winter flounder has declined somewhat since the late 2000s, but has stabilized in the surveys, you know, relative to the past 4 or 5 years. The exploitation rate is actually declined, and so it's at approximately the lowest level that it's been over the time series for this assessment. Next slide. So the conclusion here is the overfished status is unknown. The overfishing or overfishing is not occurring. And you can see sort of the time series of the exploitation rate or the exploitable biomass versus the exploitation rate. The stock is not in a rebuilding plan since Gulf of Maine winter flounder was never declared as overfished. Next slide. Okay, moving on to Atlantic sea scallops. Next slide. So here, the assessment found that the biomass was well above BMSY, and the apparent fishing mortality is below FMSY. So the stock is not overfished, and overfishing is not occurring. That said, the stock biomass is declining due to mortality of the large 2012 and 2013 year classes and lower recruitment that has occurred since those two year classes. The landings in 2019 were the second highest on record, but the projections show that these landings will decline over the next several years. Next slide. So here is sort of the time series of fishing mortality. You can see that it was that it increased relatively sharply from 1980 to the early 1990s. It declined to relatively lower levels by the mid 1990s and has been relatively stable since that point. And that red dotted line is the overfishing threshold. And you can see that while for some of, well, certainly for the Georges Bank stock, the exploitation rate is increasing, but it has not exceeded that overfishing threshold. And then the graph on the right shows the biomass in metric tons of mean of metric tons of meat weights. And you can see there, that the biomass has declined in the most recent years, but still remains at relatively high levels. Next slide. This shows that the FMSY and BMSY reference points are slightly lower than those for the 2018 benchmark assessments. So there has been a revision in the associated reference points. And those have been revised slightly downward. Next slide. Moving on to northern and southern red hake. Next slide. So here, starting with northern hake, the overfishing status, our recommendation is that it is unknown and that the overfished condition is unknown. Here, the assessment was not accepted by the peer review panel in an empirical approach that was developed through the PDT and the SSC has been developed to produce catch advice. The swept area biomass approach is based on information from the NTAP catchability study. The survey biomass appears to be high, but is decreasing, and the relative exploitation rate appears to be low. Next slide. So with southern silver hake, similar sort of results here. The overfishing status is unknown. The overfish status, the recommendation is that it is unknown. Again, the assessment was not accepted in an empirical approach. Has been developed determine catch advice. The survey biomass increased in 2019. The exploitation rate for this stock also appears to be relatively low. And there'll be more information about the two Red Hake stocks within the SSC report that follows this presentation. Next slide. Moving on to Georges Bank Winter Flounder. Next slide. So in this case, the recommended stock status is that the stock is overfished, but overfishing is not occurring. You can see that on the left-hand panel that the biomass was relatively high in around 1980. It declined to a relatively low level by the mid-1990s. It did climb again between the late 1990s and 2000, declined after 2000, and is sort of bouncing around right around the biomass threshold. You can see on the right-hand panel, the exploitation rate on this stock was relatively high through time, exceeding the current thresholds for most of the time series. You can see that that declined after 2010, and that that's at relatively low levels, and that's been relatively stable over the last 3 or 4 years. Next slide. So important changes since last year. There was no 2020 spring survey. This is one of the few stocks that we have left that utilizes a virtual population analysis model. And those models do utilize the spring survey in the last year. There was a change to the F40 reference points. This represents the best available scientific advice for the stock, so that you can see the table here below, a fairly significant decrease in the FMSY value, somewhat of a decrease in the SSB MSY value, and the maximum sustainable yield estimate is significantly lower. So again, there has not been a change in the recommended status for this stock. Overfishing is not occurring, but the stock does remain in an overfished condition. Next slide. Finally, we'll review the results for Southern New England Mid-Atlantic Yellowtail Flounder. Next slide. The current model is an ASAP model, and it has a single fleet representing the commercial and recreational landings and discards for ages 1 to 7+. Some of the changes to the new assessment, we added newly calibrated MRIP data, recreational fishing data. There were some adjustments to the model. We also added the NEOMAP spring survey as a tuning index to this particular assessment. Next slide. We take a look at the results here. The top panel is spawning stock biomass. We can see that this was relatively high in the 1980s. It declined to relatively low levels by the mid-1990s. And there has been probably a stabilization in the spawning stock biomass for this stock since the last assessment, but it again remains at relatively low levels. The fishing mortality rate in the middle panel, you can see was relatively high through time. That has declined since the last assessment, and it's basically approximately equal to the lowest fishing mortality rates in the time series, which occurred in 2010 and then again in the most recent year. And then probably the real issue with this stock, you can see the recruits in the bottom. So this is incoming young fish to the population. We can see that that was relatively high in the 1980s. And that has just declined relatively steadily. And right now it is at a record low levels relative to the time series. So this is a stock where we're just not seeing any response relative to recruitment. Next slide. So if we take a look, this is the stock status. You can see the time series, which starts on the right-hand side of the graph, and you can see that, you know, sort of the steady degradation of the status of the stock, so that it now resides in the lower left-hand panel. You can see that there's a retrospective adjustment shown there, but it's within the certainty bounds of the estimate. So in this case, for this stock, the status is unchanged. The stock is overfished. Overfishing is not occurring. And again, there's a minor retrospective bias, but no adjustment was made since it was within the uncertainty bounds of the assessment. Next slide. Okay, so managed to get through just a brief summary of the assessment results and status recommendations for the 14 stock assessments. And in the last couple of slides, I just want to try and address some of the questions that have come up relative to incorporation of new data sources into stock assessments. Well, the two sources that I'll talk about are the NTAP catchability estimates. And here, these are results of the chain sweep studies, twin trawl studies that were used to estimate relative catchability of the center's bottom trawl survey for flatfish and demersal species. And in this case, these estimates are used to, the catchability estimates are used to adjust survey results so that we can get theoretical absolute biomass estimates coming out of the surveys. And then finally, talk a little bit about the electronic monitoring data and how that's starting to enter into our stock assessments. This is primarily utilization of length frequency information that's being collected at a very high frequency in the full retention study. So try and address those two things. Next slide. So here, want to emphasize that there are 12 assessments now that are incorporating NTAP catchability estimates. There are new ones here that are bolded, the winter flounder stocks, the windowpane stocks, the red hake stocks, and southern New England mid-Atlantic yellowtail flounder were all assessed this year and did incorporate NTAP catchability estimates into their various assessment approaches. As a general approach, the catchability estimated from the catchability study was used to expand the survey results to a population estimate. This does assume that the chain sweep study has 100% efficiency. So we'll continue to work with NTAP to evaluate, analyze, and incorporate the information that they produce into the stock assessments where their work is focused. And they've primarily been focused at this point on demersal species that are relatively flat to the bottom. So next slide. And then with the electronic monitoring data, we're starting to utilize the information that's coming out of primarily the full retention aspect of EM work. And so we're taking a look at the length frequency information that's coming from that work. It has been incorporated into the stock assessments listed below. The two primary ones that that were assessed this year were Southern New England Mid-Atlantic Flounder, and then the Southern New England Mid-Atlantic Winter Flounder. So Yellowtail Flounder and Winter Flounder in Southern New England Mid-Atlantic. You'll notice that there aren't any Georges Bank stocks on the list here. That's because we're not getting trips that are going out to the Georges Bank area within that particular study. I will point out that we are, both the center and the regional office continue to work on our catch accounting and monitoring system. And this will fully incorporate electronic monitoring estimates of discards. So the goal here is to basically use the same information and the same estimates that are generated for catch monitoring to use in assessment work so that we're as consistent as possible in terms of how we interpret the data and how that information is used for both catch monitoring and assessment work. And next slide, and I believe that concludes my presentation. So, Mr. Chairman, there is certainly time for questions if folks have questions relative to what I've presented.
Great. Thank you very much for the presentation, Dr. Brown. We're going to open it up to questions from council members first, but I'm going to call on Mr. Neese first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Russ. Very helpful and informative presentation. I think there might have been a typo on one or two of your slides. I thought the stock we assessed this year was Southern New England Mid-Atlantic Winter Flounder. And a couple of your slides, I think, had it listed as Southern New England Mid-Atlantic Yellowtail. I just wanted to clear that up and see if I'm right.
I think you're right, yes.
Thank you.
All right, thank you for that. Start with council members. Any questions from council members? Terry Alexander.
Hi, thanks, Russ. So the catchability stuff, Tim Miller was working on something through NTAP for some kind of analysis this winter. Do you have an update on that at all? But Georges Bank Yellowtails?
I know that Tim continues to work on analyzing the data and so forth. I'm certain that the catchability estimates are used relative to Georges Bank Yellowtail. And the question is, if there has been additional tow data, there was an initial estimate of catchability for many of these stocks. And in some cases, those estimates are being updated based on additional data that's been produced by NTAP experiments. So I'd have to check to get a full and conclusive answer. But, the analysis continues relative to additional data that's produced in experiments. And as you know, it's been more difficult to conduct field work in 2020, so.
Okay, thanks, Russ. I see a lot of hands up, so I'll stop there.
All right, Salerno, Itri, Sissonwine, Balzano. Mr. Salerno.
Got me now?
Yeah, we got you.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Chairman. Dr. Brown, I have some questions related to the EM data that you referenced that was used recently. you said that you guys were using the landed catch length frequencies. Is this the kept or the discard component? Because my understanding about the max retention, one of the biggest benefits is that they were actually bringing in the discards to be sampled at the dock. And my second question is, will there be any consideration of using the discarded lengths collected in the audit model program as well in the assessment process?
Okay. The answer to your first question is yes. Under the full retention, everything's coming to the dock. And so we have somewhat of a mix of both, landed catch that would normally be landed on a non-full retention trip, plus some additional, sub-legal fish or fish that would normally be discarded on the trip. And so those are being considered by the analyst in terms of trying to split things out. For some of the species, the subcomponent, the component that would normally be discarded is relatively low. And so we get a relatively clean sample of what the landed catch would be. Relative to the other experiment, we are still working on potentially incorporating that length frequency data. We're simply not as far along in terms of working on that particular data set, but we do see value in the information that's being collected in the audit model component of the M.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Attorney Etri.
Sorry, I accidentally unraised my hand, but I put it back up for whoever's lowering it. So hi, Russ, couple questions to follow up on what Dan was asking regarding the EM data. So first, I mean, could you maybe just quickly elaborate a little bit on what is causing some of the delays in incorporating the length frequency from the audit EM program? That obviously has been, those pilots have been being pursued for a much longer period than the max retention program. So I'm curious what the holdup is incorporating that data into the system, into the assessment system. And then also, if I'm understanding what was on that slide correctly, the data that you're bringing into the system is not being used to inform biomass estimates of any of these stocks, the EM data you're bringing in. Right now you're using dockside monitoring data and you haven't incorporated actual video data yet, but it's not being used to inform the biomass, it's just being used to calculate the discards. Is that correct?
Okay. Let me start with your first question. Part of the holdup relative to the audit model is actually getting databases that are sort of consistent and standardized so that we can actually tap into and utilize the data. So we are actively working on improving those databases. But there's also needs to be an analysis relative to, how well those data represent what's going on in the entire fleet. So in other words, is the length frequency data from the audit model, representative of what's going on trips that are not within that EM program? And so those are analyses that we need to conduct before we sort of blindly apply that information across the entire fishery. And the concern here is actually there's quite a bit of length frequency data coming from these EM trips, under the audit model. So the concern is if they're not representative of what's going on in the entire fleet, they could essentially swamp out data that's being collected from non-EM trips. And so that's sort of the subtlety of what we need to work through relative to incorporating that data. And then I think your second question related to the actual estimates of discards. And let me try and weed through that as carefully as I can. the fact is that the video data is basically being used to verify discard estimates that are being recorded. So again, when we get the full CAM system operating, the actual estimates of discards, through EM will be in the system, and they'll be used consistently consistently for both catch monitoring and for assessment work. There's again some subtleties there in terms of how the video data is being utilized, whether it's being utilized for verification work or whether it's being utilized to develop or to directly develop estimates and things like that. So I'll stop there and see if you have a follow-up, because I
thank you for that. I do have some follow-ups for kind of the future thought of how this could or cannot be used for the biomass estimates and assessments, because, as you're probably well aware, there are many in industry who feel that if it can't be used to improve our understanding of the biomass estimates, it's not as value add as folks think it is. But we can talk a little bit more offline on that one. I want to go back to the audit analysis really quickly, just as one follow-up question. For a variety of reasons, because I think the technical details are still being worked out, I was not in a position this year to recommend to the folks that I work with any broad consideration of the audit EM program. There's still too many details for a lot of businesses to embark on that program with the unknowns that they have. So it leads me to kind of a chicken and egg question. How many vessels do you ultimately need participating in an audit EM program to do this analysis to determine how representative it is of the fleet? I feel like maybe we're in a chicken and egg situation now with the audit EM program. And I'm just wondering if you guys at least have a general sense of when you get a critical mass that you could actually do that analysis, or if the current EM participants are enough to do that analysis.
I don't actually have a direct answer for your question. I don't know. What I do know is the more representative the more representative we can make the fleet involved in the EM program relative to the total fleet, the more robust the analysis will end up being. So, but I don't have a clean answer to. Do we have the right component of participation in the EM program at this point? It's sort of outside of my expertise at this point.
Okay, thank you.
All right, next up, Dr. Sissonwein, then Balzano, then Reed, then Hughes. Dr. Sissonwein.
Hi, thank you. Good presentation, Russ, I appreciate it. Very quick question. You mentioned that when the estimates the assessments were based on 100% efficiency assumption about chain sweep, based on the chain sweep efficiency studies. Were you referring to efficiency between the doors or between the wings? There's obviously a huge difference.
Between the wings.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Balzano.
Hang on a sec. I'm having trouble unmuting him.
You got me now?
Yes, we hear you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hi, Russ. Thanks for that nice presentation. Ms. Etrie asked and answered most of my questions, but I guess I just started wondering, is there a difference between the vessel composition between the full retention and audit model on the EM project?
Again, I can't directly answer that question. I, you know, in a sense, the full retention, one thing that I've noticed about the full retention vessels is they're not fishing, say, on George's Bank. That makes some logical sense to me in this, you know, in the sense that, you know, they're bringing all of their catch back, and it may be more difficult to do on more extended trips and things like that. So that may be one difference between the vessels that are participating in the two projects. But I would sort of defer a technical question like that to the folks that are actually conducting the EM work.
All right, thank you. And I'll just say from a personal note, I'm part of the audit model right now. And I'm having debate within myself whether or not I should go to the full retention program.
Okay.
So that was really the question. That was kind of more of a personal question than it was a policy question. So, and I just assumed that the composition was different because you're able to use the data.
Well, it's there are differences in terms of how the information is collected and obviously what is collected. So, you know, that partially accounts for the differences in, you know, our relative timing of utilizing the information within our stock assessments.
Understood. I probably have some conversations with the people involved in the program and yourself offline on this, but thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Next up, Mr. Reed and then Mr. Hughes.
Thank you, Dr. Chairman. I appreciate it, and I appreciate the presentation. My question is about efficiency. How do you justify that the chain sweep is 100% efficient? Where did that? How is that number derived? That's my first question. My second question is on the calculation of swept area. I'm curious to know whether or not that's based on the time the winches are locked up, or the time the gear is actually on the bottom, and our bottom contact sensors even used in the survey.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. With the net mensuration, answer your second question first. With the net mensuration that was available for both the sweep study, the twin trawl study, and what's used on the Northeast Fisheries Science Center bottom trawl surveys, we're actually using actual bottom time, you know, time that the trawl spent on the bottom. So we do have within our databases, you know, information relative to, you know, when the trawl actually touched down, when it actually lifted off the bottom. And for those of you who are involved in bottom trawling operations, especially when you get into deep water, you know, the trawl doesn't necessarily touch bottom when the winches are locked, and it doesn't necessarily lift off the bottom when the winches are engaged. We're fortunate with the Henry Bigelow that we have a very powerful winch system. And so we're able to, particularly in deep water, get the trawl off the bottom fairly quickly after the winches are re-engaged and things like that. With respect to your first question, the answer is we don't really have a technical approach to estimating what the true efficiency of a bottom trawl is. To do that, you would have to have gear that either has 100% catch efficiency or a way of monitoring what was in the path of the trawl and what was actually swept up within the trawl. And it's important to recognize that, you know, there's uncertainties in terms of there are fish species out there that react to the vessel passing over over an area that the trawl will ultimately sweep. The assumption of 100% efficiency was one that the NTAP has adopted. So in the course of this experiment, we basically asked them to design a gear that they felt like had the highest possible efficiency for bottom, you know, for bottom dwelling species. So the concern here was obviously escapement under under the foot rope of the trowel. And so the chain sweep was that solution. Again, if the efficiency of the chain sweep is actually the true efficiency is less than 100%, then those absolute biomass estimates would be somewhat underestimated.
Okay, thank you.
All right, next up, Mr. Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Russ. Good morning. My question is in regards to northern and southern window pane and why the high confidence in the southern window pane versus almost no confidence in the northern window pane. When I look at your fall bottom trawl survey index on both the northern and the southern, there seems to be a decent amount of overlap and a lot of similarity between them. If I were to overlay them on top of each other, there are some exceptions, but I'm just wondering why the southern there's so much confidence in and the northern there's so much more noise and almost no confidence in. Thank you.
Well, this basically related to the relative fit of these two data sets to the AIM model. And the fit for the northern stock was low. And it was a poor fit that wasn't significant. For the southern stock, it was actually, you know, a significant fit to the model. And so, you know, the auxiliary information here is actually really important because the reason that we utilize something like the AIM model is so that we have, you know, that we can potentially develop reference points to compare, you know, and to, you know, make a firm status determination relative to these stocks. But the auxiliary information is important, and that is that it appears that the relative exploitation rate on both of these stocks is relatively low. While the overfishing status is unknown, we know or we think that the exploitation rate is pretty low. There's obviously not a lot of, there is no directed fishing on these stocks, and there's not a lot of catch on these stocks. You know, that's the primary difference, you know, is that model fit relative to our level of certainty or uncertainty in what's going on. But that auxiliary information that we provide is certainly considered by headquarters when they're making status determination decisions.
Thank you, Russ.
Excuse me, Dr. Sissonwine, then Mr. Alexander.
Yes, thank you. Question that's really a follow-up on Peter Hughes's comment about window pane. I had been thinking about this earlier on. Russ, is it fair to say that the level of peer review, you know, whether it's level one, two, or three, or whatever the numbers are, is more a reflection of uncertainty in the model than it is necessarily about uncertainty in the status of the stock? I mean, that seems to be what you just described is the difference between the two window panes.
That's a fair description of things. It's when, you know, the from an assessment oversight panel perspective, when we see new information coming in or we see issues such as missing survey data that needs to be treated in some way that's perhaps not straightforward. We believe that those kinds of situations basically merit more scrutiny in the peer review process. And then situations where we have poor model fits or perhaps model misspecification or issues like that also merit, you know, sort of a greater level of peer review. And so, you know, it's, you know, that's, those are sort of the criteria that we're using to try and allocate that peer review time to make sure that it focuses on areas where we feel that the review is most merited and has potential for improving the assessments.
Thank you. That's certainly sensible. I just thought it was important that people recognize what it really signifies when you have various levels of peer review. If I could, Mr. Chair, could I ask one other quick question? It concerns the Northern Silverhake. And Ross, can you confirm for me that the level in the survey of Northern Silverhake in recent years, even though there's a bit of a decline, is actually quite similar to what it was when the surveys began in the 60s? And the reason I ask that is because, you know, I was involved in a lot of ecosystem modeling back in the day, and in those early models, they indicated that silverhake on George's Bank was the primary predator and, in fact, responsible for consuming a lot more fish production by a factor of several times more fish production than was actually being caught. So from the context of the ecosystem discussion we were having yesterday, a northern silverhake population, which includes George's Bank, that is rivaling the levels of the 1960s would be pretty significant ecologically. Am I correct that it's at comparable levels in the survey? Thank you.
You are correct. You know, since about 2010, the survey indices for northern silverhake have been, you know, at levels, comparable and frankly higher than they were in the mid to late 1960s. The 1963 survey index was quite high, but the levels that we've seen since 2010 actually exceed what we've seen from the mid 1960s, through 1970. So they are relatively high.
Thank you. Again, that's really in the context of the importance of the ecosystem issues, but thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to call on Mr. Alexander, then Attorney Eitri. Just one general statement that some of these questions are better directed to Dr. Hare tomorrow, the trawl questions and whatnot. So I think Russ is happy to answer any questions, but he was here to speak to the presentation he made. The broader ones, I think Dr. Hare will be prepared to discuss tomorrow. But with that, Mr. Alexander, then Attorney Eitri.
So mine has direct correlation to the trawl thing. So I'll wait for John here tomorrow. Thank you, John.
Okay. Attorney Eitri.
Thanks. This might be a question for John tomorrow, and I might have worked it out a little bit in for myself. But Russ, the dockside monitoring data that you've used through the max retention EM program, you mentioned that you didn't have any boats really fishing on George's. I'm just trying to get a sense of the Southern New England winter flounder. Maybe you can answer this even if you know it because of confidentiality. I'm just trying to figure out where that catch is coming from, because at least from the vessels I'm thinking about, they're mostly up in the Gulf of Maine. Is it Fab 21 fishing, or don't answer it if you don't know it, or I can look into it later or talk to you offline if it's easier.
I actually don't know the answer to it.
Okay.
So I would have to look into it.
Okay, maybe I'll just follow up with you offline. Sorry about that. Thanks.
Okay. No.
Hey, I'm going to go to the audience if there's any questions. Mr. Smith.
Can you hear me, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, I can.
Thank you. And thanks, Russ, for the presentation. I appreciate it. It's very helpful. I wanted to follow up on a couple of the questions from Libby and Dan Salerno and Vincent Balzano about the representativeness of the data from the audit model and the max retention model. As you know, I've been involved with the audit model for some time and the max retention a little bit. And I'm just struggling with this issue of representativeness of the data a little bit. You know, in the audit model, we've had 20 to 30 boats participating for upwards of 5 years at least. We've had trawls, gill nets, and hook boats participating in the program. On the max retention project, I think there's probably two or three boats that are participating, maybe for a couple of months now. So it's a little hard to get my head around the representativeness of the data and the audit model. We've literally collected thousands of samples with length frequencies on discards, and that video has been reviewed not once but twice. It's been reviewed by the service provider, and then it's been the vast majority of it, if not all of it, has been reviewed by the fishery sampling branch to check up on the service providers, make sure they're doing a good job. So given that there's just been a lot more data, a lot more gear types, a lot more time, I'm curious why the audit model data is not considered representative and the max retention is. I do know that there was some discussion that we had along the way that perhaps the audit model data might be different because the fishermen had a different set of incentives that they were fishing under, because a lot of them were being monitored on 100% of their trips, not on a subset like the other boats. But I think that also applies to the max retention boats as well. I do think they are fishing under a different set of incentives. So a long-winded way of trying to get to my question, if you could just talk a little bit more about why the audit model data is not considered representative for the purposes of the assessments, but the max retention information is. Thank you.
Okay, let me maybe try to address what might be a misunderstanding. We're not saying that the audit model data is not representative. We're saying that we haven't had an opportunity to look at and evaluate it yet. Okay, so that's different. I'm absolutely totally confident that the audit model data is entirely representative of the 20 boats that are in the program, okay? And that that some extremely high quality data is being collected there. The question is that information consistent with what's happening in the rest of the fleet, you know, outside of the audit model? And the answer there, at least for us, is we don't know whether it's representative of what's going on in the rest of the fleet. So, I want to be real clear here. We believe that the data that's being collected in these experiments is very high quality and is absolutely representative of what's going on those trips. What we're a little bit cautious about is expanding that information to the entire rest of the fleet. So there's just some analysis that needs to go on there to say, to confirm, yes, what's going on in the EM fleet is representative of what's going on in the rest of the fleet, or no, it isn't. So we just need to make sure that when we apply those data, that we apply it to the boats, the catch that's occurring within the EM program. So that's just going to take a little bit of time to sort out. Does that, I hope that helps clarify things a little.
It does, Russ, and thanks. And I'm sorry if I misunderstood what you said. I apologize if I did. I don't know that I did. If I did, maybe others did as well. But just real quickly to follow up, any idea on the timing on when that analysis might begin, or more importantly, end, so that we can begin to incorporate that data into the assessments? Because it is something, as others have mentioned, it's important to the fishermen who are participating. I agree with you that it's high quality data, and I believe the sooner we can get it into the assessments, the better our assessments will be. So any idea on timing on that?
Well, we're absolutely motivated to utilize these data to the greatest extent that we can. We are hoping that the establishment of the CAM system, the catch accounting and monitoring system that we're working on, is going to help facilitate the analysis that we hope to do. We have started taking a look at this, so it's not that we're sitting on our hands and completely waiting, but I don't have a firm projection at this point relative to when that analysis will be complete or the extent to which we'll be able to incorporate various data sources. The more that we can get information into standardized databases and get assessment analysts familiar with that data and the data structures and things, the quicker that we'll be able to move in terms of evaluating the information and then applying it appropriately to these stock assessments.
All right, Ms. O'Dell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hi, Ross, how are you?
Well.
So two quick questions. One, in regards to the your report on the most recent assessment, it looks like we still have some stocks that are having issues with a retrospective bias, and I'm interested if there's been any discussions about either with those stocks or moving forward in preparation for the assessment for next year, if there's been any discussion about really trying to identify what the source of the retrospective bias is that's occurring, rather than just continuing to follow a process where we're making adjustments accordingly. So that was my first question. And then the second question is in regards to, I'm sorry, we're also stuck on the electronic monitoring data and what's being collected and how it's being used. But I'm also a little bit stuck on how it's being used in assessments. And so just for clarification purposes, when you list, for instance, Claud and Haddock as using length frequencies from the full retention study, is that basically what's occurring, I would assume, from last year's assessment, is the data that's being generated, or perhaps the ports, it's being combined with data in regards to like port sampling, because you had mentioned that you don't have the capacity yet to have a database where you're collecting the information and you're able to compare it to and see if it's representative to other sources. So you're using it either in combination with port sampling, or you're looking at it in terms of quote unquote verification. And I guess I'm still confused. I'm confused if it's just the data that was collected, is it just being combined into information that's being used already from port sampling, or is it actually having a specific usefulness?
Okay. Let me try and address your retrospective bias question first. We continue for the stocks that have significant retrospective patterns. We continue to investigate, you know, what's potentially causing those retrospective patterns. And it's something that's inherent, not just in stock assessments in this region, but there are issues with other regions too. So some of the sort of stationarity assumptions that we make within stock assessments, such as natural mortality being constant and things like that, are things that, you know, we're starting to look at, and whether, you know, the overall productivity of a stock is we can expect it to be stable through time. We know things are changing out there. The question is sort of, you know, how to assess that. And whether we can make strides. We do have stocks where the retrospective pattern has improved, in other words, has become less significant. So that is occurring in some stocks, but we do have significant issues with retrospective stock patterns in other stocks. So we're certainly not satisfied with just making a Mohn's correction in those cases. We really would like to understand and account for the sources of those patterns. And then with the EM data, the two sources of information that we have to characterize the length or the size and age composition of the catch is basically the port sampling program. And those are regional office contractors who are collecting length and age samples within the ports of the landed catch. And then the new source is obviously the EM data that's coming from dockside monitoring. And in those cases, we're using the EM data to supplement the port sampling length frequencies in order to try and characterize the size and age composition of the catch as accurately as we can.
Okay, so it is being used separately, not being combined with the regular port sampling data.
Yeah, exactly. We're you know, there's a
We lost you, Russ.
Try again, Russ. We lost you. You should be back now.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Okay. So in this case, we're basically using the EM data to supplement the port sampling data to try and get the best characterization we can of the size and age composition of the catch. This becomes particularly important for the part of the catch where we don't have a lot of length and age samples, and that generally is relative to the older and larger size fish. So the whale cod and things like that are relatively rare in the catch, we can always use more samples to characterize their size and age.
Thank you very much, Dr. Brown. see no further hands up. Appreciate your presentation and answering the questions. Next up, SSC committee report, Dr. McNamee.